Daenerys. The heart was steaming in the cool evening air when Khal Drogo set it before her, raw and bloody. His arms were red to the elbow. Behind him, his blood riders knelt on the sand beside the corpse of the wild stallion, stone knives in their hands. The stallion's blood looked black in the flickering orange glare of the torches that ring the high chalk walls of the pit. Danny touched the soft swell of her belly. Sweat beaded her skin and trickled down her brow. She could feel the old women watching her, the ancient crones of the Vase Dothrak, with eyes that shone dark as polished flint in their wrinkled faces. She must not flinch or look afraid. "I am the blood of the dragon," she told herself, as she took the stallion's heart in both hands, lifted it to her mouth, and plunged her teeth into the tough, stringy flesh. Warm blood filled her mouth and ran down over her chin. The taste threatened to gag her, but she made herself chew and swallow. The heart of a stallion would make her son strong and swift and fearless, or so the Dothraki believed, but only if the mother could eat it all. If she choked on the blood or retched up the flesh, the omens were less favourable. The child might be stillborn, or come forth weak, deformed or female. Her handmaidens had helped her ready herself for the ceremony. Despite the tender mother's stomach that had afflicted her these past 2 moons, Danny had dined on bowls of half-clotted blood to accustom herself to the taste. Andiri made her chew strips of dried horseflesh until her jaws were aching. She had starved herself for a day and a night before the ceremony in the hopes that hunger would help her keep down the raw meat. The wild stallion's heart was all muscle, and Danny had to worry it with her teeth and chew each mouthful a long time. No steel was permitted within the sacred confines of Vase Dothrak, beneath the shadow of the Mother of Mountains. She had to rip the heart apart with teeth and nails. Her stomach roiled and heaved. Yet she kept on, her face smeared with the heart's blood that sometimes seemed to explode against her lips. Khal Drogo stood over her as she ate, his face as hard as a bronze shield. His long black braid was shiny with oil. He wore gold rings in his moustache, gold bells in his braid, and a heavy belt of solid gold medallions around his waist. But his chest was bare. She looked at him whenever she felt her strength failing, looked at him and chewed and swallowed, chewed and swallowed, chewed and swallowed. Towards the end, Danny thought she glimpsed a fierce pride in his dark, almond-shaped eyes, but she could not be sure. The car's face did not often betray the thoughts within. And finally, it was done. Her cheeks and fingers were sticky as she forced down the last of it. Only then did she turn her eyes back to the old women, the crones of the Dashkaleen. "Kalaka Dathre Mahrana," she proclaimed in her best Dothraki. "A prince rides inside me." She had practiced the phrase for days with her handmaid Jiqui. The oldest of the crones, a bent and shriveled stick of a woman with a single black eye, raised her arms on high. "Kalaka Dathre," she shrieked. "The prince is riding."
"He is riding," the other women answered.
"Rock, rock, rock, Hajj," they proclaimed. "A boy, a boy, a strong boy."
Bells rang, a sudden clangor of bronze birds. A deep-throated warhorn sounded its long, low note. The old women began to chant. Underneath their painted leather vests, their withered dug swayed back and forth, shiny with oil and sweat. The eunuchs who served them threw bundles of dried grasses into a great bronze brazier, and clouds of fragrant smoke rose up toward the moon and the stars. The Dothraki believed the stars were horses made of fire,
a great herd that galloped across the sky by night. As the smoke ascended, the chanting died away, and the ancient crone closed her single eye, the better to peer into the future. The silence that fell was complete. Danny could hear the distant call of night birds, the hiss and crackle of the torches, the gentle lapping of water from the lake. The Dothraki stared at her with eyes of night, waiting. Khal Drogo laid his hand on Danny's arm. She could feel the tension in his fingers. Even a Khal as mighty as Drogo could know fear when the Dush Kaleen peered into smoke of the future. At her back, her handmaids fluttered anxiously. Finally, the crone opened her eye and lifted her arms.
"I have seen his face and heard the thunder of his hoofs," she proclaimed in a thin, wavery voice.
"The thunder of his hooves," the others chorused.
"As swift as the wind he rides, and behind him his Khalasar covers the earth, men without number, with arcs shining in their hands like blades of razor glass. Fierce as a storm this prince will be, his enemies will tremble before him, their wives will weep tears of blood and rend their flesh in grief. The bells in his hair will sing his coming, and the milkmen in their stone tents will fear his name."
The old woman trembled and looked at Danny almost as if she were afraid.
"The prince is riding, and he shall be the stallion who mounts the world."
"The stallion who mounts the world," the onlookers cried in echo, until the night rang to the sound of their voices. The one-eyed crone peered at Danny.
"What shall he be called, this stallion who mounts the world?"
She stood to answer. "He shall be called Rago," she said, using the words that Jiqui had taught her. Her hands touched the swell beneath her breasts protectively as a roar went up from the Dothraki. "Rago!" they screamed. "Rago! Rago! Rago!" The name was still ringing in her ears as Khal Drogo led her from the pit. His blood riders fell in behind them. A procession followed them out onto the God's Way, the broad grassy road that ran through the heart of Vaes Dothrak, from the Horse Gate to the Mother of Mountains. The crones of the Dush Kaleen came first, with their eunuchs and slaves. Some supported themselves with tall carved staffs as they struggled along on ancient, shaking legs, whilst others walked as proud as any horse lord. Each of the old women had been a Khaleesi once, when their lord husbands died and a new Khal took his place at the front of his riders with a new Khaleesi mounted beside him. They were sent here to reign over the vast Dothraki nation. Even the mightiest of Khals bowed to the wisdom and authority of the Dush Kaleen. Still, it gave Danny the shivers to think that one day she might be sent to join them, whether she willed it or no. Behind the wise women came the others, Khal Ogo and his son, the Kalaka Fogo, Khal Jomo and his wives, the chief men of Drogo's Khalasar, Danny's handmaids, the Khal's servants and slaves, and more. Bells rang, and drums beat a stately cadence as they marched along the God's Way. Stolen heroes and the gods of dead peoples brooded in the darkness beyond the road. Alongside the procession, slaves ran lightly through the grass, with torches in their hands, and the flickering flames made the great monument seem almost alive.
"What is meaning name Rego?"
Khal Drogo asked as they walked, using the common tongue of the Seven Kingdoms. She had been teaching him a few words when she could. Drogo was quick to learn when he put his mind to it, though his accent was so thick and barbarous that neither Ser Jorah nor Viserys could understand a word he said. "My brother Rhaegar was a fierce warrior, my sun and stars," she told him. He died before I was born. Sir Jorah says he was the last of the dragons. Khal Drogo looked down at her. His face was a copper mask, yet under the long black moustache, drooping beneath the weight of its gold rings, she thought she glimpsed the shadow of a smile.
"Is good name Dan Eri's wife, moon of my life," he said.
They rode to the lake the Dothraki called the Womb of the World, surrounded by a fringe of reeds, its water still and calm. 1,000,000 years ago, Jiqui told her, the first man had emerged from its depths, riding upon the back of the first horse. The procession waited on the grassy shore as Dani stripped and let her soiled clothing fall to the ground. Naked, she stepped gingerly into the water. Iris said the lake had no bottom, but Dani felt soft mud squishing between her toes as she pushed through the tall reeds. The moon floated on the still black waters, shattering and reforming as her ripples washed over it. Goose pimples rose on her pale skin as the coldness crept up her thighs and kissed her lower lips. The stallion's blood had dried on her hands and around her mouth. Dani cupped her fingers and lifted the sacred waters over her head, cleansing herself and the child inside her, while the Carl and the others looked on. She heard the old women of the Dashkaleen muttering to each other as they watched and wondered what they were saying. When she emerged from the lake, shivering and dripping, a handmaid, Doria, hurried to her with a robe of painted sand silk, but Khal Drogo waved her away. He was looking on her swollen breasts and the curve of her belly with approval, and Dani could see the shape of his manhood pressing through his horsehide trousers below the heavy gold medallions of his belt. She went to him and helped him unlace. Then her huge Khal took her by the hips and lifted her into the air as he might lift a child. The bells in his hair rang softly. Dani wrapped her arms around his shoulders and pressed her face against his neck as he thrust himself inside her. Three quick strokes, and it was done.
"The stallion who mounts the world," Drogo whispered hoarsely.
His hands still smelt of horse blood. He bit at her throat hard in the moment of his pleasure, and when he lifted her off, his seed filled her and trickled down the inside of her thighs. Only then was Daria permitted to drape her in the scented sand silk, and Iri to fit soft slippers to her feet. Khal Drogo laced himself up and spoke a command, and horses were brought to the lakeshore. Kahalo had the honor of helping the Khaleesi onto her silver. Drogo spurred his stallion and set off down the God's Way beneath the moon and stars. On her silver, Dani easily kept pace. The silk tenting that roofed Khal Drogo's hall had been rolled up tonight, and the moon followed them inside. Flames leapt 10 feet in the air from the three huge stone-lined fire pits. The air was thick with the smell of roasting meat and curdled fermented mare's milk. The hall was crowded and noisy when they entered, the cushions packed with those whose rank and name were not sufficient to allow them at the ceremony. As Dani rode beneath the arched entry and up the center aisle, every eye was on her. The Dothraki screamed out comments on her belly and her breasts, hailing the life within her. She could not understand all they shouted, but one phrase came clear. "The stallion that mounts the world," she heard, bellowed in 1,000 voices. The sounds of drums and horns swirled up into the night. Half-clothed women spun and danced on the low tables, amidst joints of meat and platters piled high with plums and dates and pomegranates. Many of the men were drunk on clotted mare's milk, yet Dani knew no Arax would clash tonight. Not here, in the sacred city, where blades and bloodshed were forbidden. Khal Drogo dismounted and took his place on the high bench. Khal Jomo and Khal Ogo, who had been in Vase Dethrak with their Kalasars when they arrived, were given seats of high honour to Droga's right and left. The blood riders of the three Karls sat below them, and farther down, Karl Jomo's four wives. Danny climbed off her silver and gave the reins to one of the slaves. As Doria and Iri arranged her cushions, she searched for her brother. Even across the length of the crowded hall, Viserys should have been conspicuous with his pale skin, silvery hair, and beggar's rags, but she did not see him anywhere. Her glance roamed the crowded tables near the walls, where men, whose braids were even shorter than their manhoods, sat on frayed rugs and flat cushions around the low tables, but all the faces she saw had black eyes and copper skin. She spied Sir Jorah Mormont near the centre of the hall, close to the middle fire pit. It was a place of respect, if not high honour. The Dothraki esteemed the knight's prowess with a sword. Danny sent Shiqui to bring him to her table. Mormont came at once and went to one knee before her.
"Khaleesi," he said, "I'm yours to command."
She patted the stuffed horsehide cushion beside her. "Sit and talk with me."
"Oh, you honour me?"
The knight seated himself cross-legged on the cushion. A slave knelt before him, offering a wooden platter full of ripe figs. Sir Jorah took one and bit it in half. "Where is my brother?" Danny asked. "He ought to have come by now, for the feast."
I saw his grace this morning," he told her. "He told me he was going to the Western Market in search of wine."
"Wine?" Danny said doubtfully. Viserys could not abide the taste of the fermented mare's milk the Dothraki drank. She knew that. And he was oft at the bazaars these days, drinking with the traders who came in the great caravans from east and west. He seemed to find their company more congenial than hers.
"Wine," Sir Jorah confirmed. "And he has some thought to recruit men for his army from the sellswords who guard the caravans."
A servant girl laid a blood pie in front of him, and he attacked it with both hands. "Is that why?" she asked. "He has no gold to pay soldiers. What if he's betrayed?" Caravan guards were seldom troubled much by thoughts of honour, and the usurper in King's Landing would pay well for her brother's head.
"You ought to have gone with him to keep him safe. You are his sworn sword." "We are in Vaes Dothrak," he reminded her. "No one may carry a blade here, or shed a man's blood."
"Yet men die," she said. "Jogo told me. Some of the traders have eunuchs with them, huge men, who strangle thieves with wisps of silk. That way no blood is shed, and the guards are not angered."
"Then let us hope your brother will be wise enough not to steal anything."
Sir Jorah wiped the grease off his mouth with the back of his hand and leaned close over the table.
"He had planned to take your dragon's eggs until I warned him that I'd cut off his hand if he so much as touched them."
For a moment, Danny was so shocked she had no words.
"My eggs? But they're mine. Magister Illyrio gave them to me, a bridal gift. Why would Viserys want... They're only stones."
"The same could be said of rubies and diamonds and fire opals, Princess. And the dragon's eggs are rarer by far. Those traders he's been drinking with would sell their own manhoods for even one of those stones. And with all three, Viserys could buy as many cell swords as he might need."
Danny had not known, had not even suspected. "Then he should have them. He does not need to steal them. He had only to ask. He is my brother, and my true king."
"He is your brother," Sir Jorah acknowledged.
"You do not understand, sir," she said. "My mother died, giving me birth, and my father and my brother Rhaegar even before that. I would never have known so much as their names if Viserys had not been there to tell me. He was the only one left. The only one. He is all I have."
"Once," said Sir Jorah. "No longer, Khaleesi. You belong to the Dothraki now. In your womb rides a stallion who mounts the world."
He held out his cup, and a slave filled it with fermented mare's milk, sour-smelling and thick with clots. Danny waved her away. Even the smell of it made her feel ill, and she would take no chances of bringing up the horse's heart.
she had forced herself to eat. "What does it mean?" she asked. "What is this stallion? Everyone was shouting it at me, but I don't understand."
"A stallion is the Carl of Carls, promised in ancient prophecy, child. He will unite the Dothraki into a single Khalasar and ride to the ends of the earth, or so it was promised. All the people of the world will be his herd."
"Oh," Danny said in a small voice. Her hand smoothed her robe down over the swell of her stomach. "I named him Rago."
"A name to make the usurper's blood run cold."
Suddenly, Doria was tugging at her elbow. "My lady," the handmaid whispered urgently, "your brother." Danny looked down the length of the long, roofless hall, and there he was, striding toward her. From the lurch in his step, she could tell at once that Viserys had found his wine, and something that passed for courage. He was wearing his scarlet silks, soiled and travel-stained. His cloak and gloves were black velvet, faded from the sun. His boots were dry and cracked, his silver blonde hair matted and tangled. A longsword swung from his belt in a leather scabbard. The Dothraki eyed the sword as he passed. Danny heard curses and threats and angry muttering rising all around her like a tide. The music died away in a nervous stammering of drums. A sense of dread closed round her heart. "Go to him," she commanded Ser Jorah. "Stop him. Bring him here. Tell him he can have the dragon's eggs, if that's what he wants." The knight rose swiftly to his feet.
"Where is my sister?"
Viserys shouted, his voice thick with wine.
"I've come for her feast. How dare you presume to eat without me? No one eats before the king. Where is she? The whore can't hide from the dragon."
He stopped beside the largest of the three fire pits, peering around at the faces of the Dothraki. There were 5,000 men in the hall, but only a handful who knew the common tongue. Yet even if his words were incomprehensible, you had only to look at him to know that he was drunk. Ser Jorah went to him swiftly, whispered something in his ear, and took him by the arm, but Viserys wrenched free.
"Keep your hands off me. No one touches the dragon without leave."
Danny glanced anxiously up at the high bench. Khal Drogo was saying something to the other Khals beside him. Khal Jomo grinned, and Khal Ogo began to guffaw loudly. The sound of laughter made Viserys lift his eyes.
"Khal Drogo," he said thickly, his voice almost polite. "I'm here for the feast."
He staggered away from Ser Jorah, making to join the three Khals on the high bench. Khal Drogo rose, spat out a dozen words in Dothraki, faster than Danny could understand, and pointed.
"Khal Drogo says, your place is not on the high bench," Ser Jorah translated for her brother. "Khal Drogo says, your place is there."
Viserys glanced where the Khal was pointing. At the back of the long hall, in a corner by the wall, deep in shadow, so better men would not need to look on them, sat the lowest of the low. Raw, unblooded boys, old men with clouded eyes and stiff joints, the dim-witted and the maimed. Far from the meat, and farther from honor.
"That is no place for a king," her brother declared. "Is place," Khal Drogo answered in the common tongue that Danny had taught him. "Forsaw foot king."
He clapped his hands together.
"A cart! Bring cart for Khal Ragat!"
5,000 Dothraki began to laugh and shout. Ser Jorah was standing beside Viserys, screaming in his ear, but the roar in the hall was so thunderous that Danny could not hear what he was saying. Her brother shouted back, and the two men grappled, until Mormont knocked Viserys bodily to the floor. Her brother drew his sword. The bared steel shone a fearful red in the glare from the fire pits.
"Keep away from me!"
Viserys hissed. Ser Jorah backed off a step, and her brother climbed unsteadily to his feet. He waved the sword over his head, the borrowed blade that Magister Illyrio had given him to make him seem more kingly. Dothraki were shrieking at him from all sides, screaming vile curses. Dany gave a wordless cry of terror. She knew what a drawn sword meant here, even if her brother did not. Her voice made Viserys turn his head, and he saw her for the first time.
"There she is,"
he said, smiling. He stalked toward her, slashing at the air as if to cut a path through a wall of enemies, though no one tried to bar his way. The blade.
"You must not," she begged him. "Please, Viserys, it is forbidden. Put down the sword and come share my cushions. There's drink, food. Is it the dragon's eggs you want? You can have them. Only throw away the sword."
"Do as she tells you, fool," Ser Jorah shouted, "before you get us all killed."
Viserys laughs.
"They can't kill us. They can't shed blood here in the sacred city, but I can."
He laid the point of his sword between Daenerys' breasts and slid it downwards over the curve of her belly.
"I want what I came for," he told her. "I want the crown he promised me. He bought you, but he never paid for you. Tell him I want what I bargained for, or I'm taking you back, you and the eggs both. He can keep his bloody foal. I'll cut the bastard out and leave it for him."
The sword point pushed through her silks and pricked at her navel. Viserys was weeping, she saw, weeping and laughing both at the same time, this man who had once been her brother. Distantly, as from far away, Dany heard her handmaid Jiqui sobbing in fear, pleading that she dared not translate, that the cow would bind her and drag her behind his horses all the way up the Mother of Mountains. She put her arm around the girl. "Don't be afraid," she said. "I shall tell him." She did not know if she had enough words. Yet when she was done, Khal Drogo spoke a few brusque sentences in Dothraki, and she knew he understood. The son of her life stepped down from the high bench.
"What did he say?"
the man who had been her brother asked, flinching. It had grown so silent in the hall that she could hear the bells in Khal Drogo's hair chiming softly with each step he took. His blood riders followed him, like three copper shadows. Daenerys had gone cold all over. "He says, you shall have a splendid golden crown that men shall tremble to behold." Viserys smiled and lowered his sword. That was the saddest thing, the thing that tore at her afterward, the way he smiled.
"That was all I wanted," he said. "What was promised?"
When the son of her life reached her, Dany slid an arm around his waist. The carl said a word, and his blood riders leapt forward. Kotho seized the man, who had been her brother, by the arms. Hago shattered his wrist with a single sharp twist of his huge hands. Kahalo pulled the sword from his limp fingers. Even now, Viserys did not understand.
"No," he shouted, "you cannot touch me. I am the dragon, and I will be crowned."
Khal Drogo unfastened his belt. The medallions were pure gold, massive and ornate, each one as large as a man's hand. He shouted a command. Cook slaves pulled a heavy iron stew pot from the fire pit, dumped the stew onto the ground, and returned the pot to the flames. Drogo tossed in the belt and watched without expression as the medallions turned red and began to lose their shape. She could see fires dancing in the onyx of his eyes. A slave handed him a pair of thick horsehair mittens, and he pulled them on, never so much as looking at the man. Viserys began to scream, the high, wordless scream of the coward facing death. He kicked and twisted, whimpered like a dog, and wept like a child, but the Dothraki held him tight between them. Ser Jorah had made his way to Dany's side. He put a hand on her shoulder.
"Turn away, my princess, I beg you."
No. She folded her arms across the swell of her belly protectively. At the last, Viserys looked at her. Sister, please, Danny, tell them, make them, sweet sister. When the gold was half melted and starting to run, Drogo reached into the flames, snatched out the pot.
Crown, he roared, here, a crown for Khart King,
and upended the pot over the head of the man who had been her brother. The sound Viserys Targaryen made when that hideous iron helmet covered his face was like nothing human. His feet hammered a frantic beat against the dirt floor, slowed, stopped. Thick globs of molten gold dripped down onto his chest, setting the scarlet silk to smouldering. Yet no drop of blood was spilled. He was no dragon, Danny thought, curiously calm. Fire cannot kill a dragon.